Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist, Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now.
Hey there, Cyrus.
Hey, Marianne.
Great to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Happy, happy new year.
Yeah, it's a new year, 2024. Wow.
That's a big number.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the different kinds of numbers I heard recently. For example, 2035 is the year that the government wants to phase out gas vehicles.
Wow.
So
okay.
That's their deadline.
Okay. I mean, that can feel like a faraway ways away, but honestly, it's also not that far away.
The sale of. I don't think the operation of.
Operation of. Okay. Okay. That's a little less scary. But okay, but even the sale of, that's
yes.
A big deal.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the government was getting involved. Okay,
yes,
there you go.
Yes, they've already got plans. They're talking about electric transit.
Okay.
Moving more to carpooling. And this is kind of what I think we would do as a society if we're really concerned about emissions.
Sure.
And of course, that's not the only thing to be concerned about. You know about the mining for lithium, and that's environmental.
I haven't heard much about that. No. There's so much, isn't there?
Yes. Oh. How are we going to get it right?
I know. I just heard, I don't know, it was just a headline or something about how banning or not using plastic bags wasn't as environmental as we thought. I didn't read the article, so I don't know. But it's just like, oh, there's always so many angles on everything and so much I don't know.
Yeah.
So much I don't know.
So much I don't know.
Yes.
That leads well into our topic. We always tend to do that just organically, really, because our topic today is wonders never cease. And I think that it comes from a place of being open because we don't know. And so then we can always be in a place of, well, wonders never cease.
We're always learning. There's always things surprising us. And I feel like sometimes that can be frustrating. I wish, in some parts of my life, I wish there wouldn't be so many surprises and that I wouldn't have such a steep learning curve still. It would be nice to feel a little more mastery. I mean, I think many times people feel this way, is that when they actually learn, you know, more than the average person about a certain subject, they actually begin to realize more and more how little everybody knows about it and how much there is still to learn about a topic. And that can be wonderful for this wonder thing, but it's also like, oh, you know, like I wish I knew something. And so, yeah, I have both feelings about it. It's like, it's wonderful to explore it. It's like, oh, there's going to be growth for the rest of my life. And that's another way to think about it, too.
We could have called this embracing humility.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that feeling like, I don't know everything.
Yes. And it'll help you to be able to deal with that feeling of having not mastered and being frustrated if you give yourself over to humility.
Right. Yes. I mean, one of the definitions of humility is just the truth. It's like it's who you are and actually just realizing with honesty who you are. And I think sometimes when we have that wonder experience, when we have awe, you know, if you're on the mountaintop or you learn something new, there is that kind of experience of like, oh, that's who I am. I am not bigger than I think. I am not smaller. I am this. This is where I fit.
Yeah. Being able to see yourself in context. Being able to have context at all in any kind of situation or something that you think you have understanding of. There's always something you don't know.
Right. Kind of expecting. And this is sometimes challenging, especially in relationships. When you think you have something or some situation or some person figured out, it can feel like I can have this conversation with that person without them being there. I know what they're going to say, and I know what I'm going to say back, and I know how it's going to end, and so I don't even need to do it. And I think that expecting surprises is usually a more helpful way to move into conversations and relationships.
And if you've made up your mind ahead of time, what the other person is going to say, think, or feel, then you may be in your own head, and the relationship you have is with yourself, not with the other person at all. And you're like, well, I'm pretty sure I got this right.
Right.
And they don't even stand a chance because you have already got it right.
Yes, so true. And people could do this, you know, in a narrow way with like one person or one type of interaction, but you can also do it with like cities and countries or the world. And you can just be like, the world is going to do this to me, so why bother? And that can be a huge wall for people that limits us. And if you limit yourself in that way, then there will be less surprises. You won't have as much experience with that feeling. And maybe sometimes people do that because they don't want that feeling. They don't want to be surprised. They don't want to have that new outlook. But my hope, and if we're going to be bridging gaps, the idea here generally is that we're working towards being more open to being surprised.
Yes. Because if you don't want surprises, they're going to come and slap you in the face.
It's going to be more painful.
Yes. If you put limits on your life and put expectations, then slap.
Bam. Yes. And it's painful, right?
Yes.
And you are then humbled, which is much more challenging than just being humble, is being humbled in an active sense.
Exactly.
I know something. No, you don't. Oh, shoot. You know, like, that's a painful process. And so the more that we walk around saying we know, the more this can slap us.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. Actually, there is a scripture that talks about humble yourself and how much better it is than to be humbled.
The one where it's talking about taking the first place at a table.
Yeah.
You know, don't take the first place, you know, otherwise you're having to be moved down.
Yes.
It's better to sit at the foot of the table and be raised up.
It's coming to a banquet feast. The verse talks about as a guest and then choosing the head of the table.
Yes.
At the feast. And then the host comes along and says, oh, that...
You're in my spot.
We'll have to just move you a little back. And then there's embarrassment.
Yes.
Yeah. That's life.
That's life. So often. So often. And so, yes, it's often better to be a bit more careful.
Yeah. This is so important. And it gives grace to so many situations and relationships. There's people that you may know that you are hearing from. For example, you're hearing their life story and they've explained everything to almost the fullest, you think. And so you think you know inside and out, but they're still living their own experience.
Right.
And in their own body and in their own head. And then suddenly they make a different decision than the one that was calculated within your presence and all the advice you gave and everything that you even said. And suddenly something else comes out.
Right.
And it was like, I thought I knew this inside out.
Yes.
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Because they had a different process going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. What we see is only a small part, right? It's only a sliver of reality. You know, it's amazing how much we guess and make. And I'm not against that. I know that in principle it can feel like stereotyping or even worse things. But it's kind of like we have to in a way. There's so much that we have to guess. And we have to trust. And it comes up. I'll just give you an example from my work. So for intelligence, for example, we assess each other's intelligence through our capacity. And I think that's a fair thing to do. It might feel like it's not fair, but it's a good thing because then you're more likely to line up expectations with the person's capacity. And if you don't do that, it can be embarrassing or it can feel disappointing or it can put a lot of pressure on somebody. So we typically do it through language. We typically do it through the rate of speech, the complexity of speech. And that typically is a good way to, you know, assess somebody's intelligence because different forms of intelligence usually congregate around the same area. So if somebody has a certain intelligence verbally, then maybe spatially or in terms of their speed of intelligence, then those all kind of line up. But they sometimes don't. You can have people who have very low intelligence verbally who have an amazing spatial intelligence and will fix a car just by hearing a wrench hit the top of it, and they know exactly what's wrong, and they hardly can say anything at all, and yet they've got this amazing engineering intuition, and that's hard to assess. So there is this reality where we only see the sliver, you only see somebody speaking to you, and you make this guess about the rest of it, and that maybe is important, but there's always this room for the surprise of like, oh, wow, you've got this other capacity that I never thought was there. And the challenge of that, right? And it's like, oh, wow. When we move into relationships, we see a sliver of a interaction between a husband and a wife, or you see a sliver of an interaction when somebody tells a joke and it flops or something, or you see this other thing and you're like, you make these guesses just without even thinking, but it's really only a sliver.
Wow. I love the assessment for intelligence being in there. It showed so much grace the way you said that, because it was like, I'm open. I'm open to knowing that this one has something very different, but still genius. It doesn't look like it in this part, but in this one it does.
Right.
So all these different areas, and if you're aware that the world is that big and blossoming, and just even thinking about the word blossoming right now, thinking about flowers and the differences, that's always so fascinating. And just being able to compare that to lives.
That's right. I mean, even with a flower, right? You kind of see the plant, you kind of have these expectations, but then the blossom opens up and it's always a bit unique and a bit different. And you can have surprises, and you sometimes don't know the color, but you can guess. And so there's this reality of the expectation and then the reveal. And hopefully, oftentimes we have difficulties in life and maybe traumas in life, and so then the expectation of surprise can be terrifying. But the hope would be that you've had a life, that you have a trust, so that you can experience the surprises of life without terror, without feelings of shrinking back or contraction, where you can remain open and you can be like, I trust that I can make it through this surprise.
Yeah. That requires you to let go of control.
Yes, right?
To be able to make it through surprise.
Well, because sometimes what can happen is if you're expecting something and you really are not open to surprises, even when it reveals itself and you have evidence to the contrary, you can force the issue and be like, no, you're actually not that good at fixing cars because you can't talk to me about it. And so now I am going to still dismiss your talent. And that can be so painful. It can cost you in your life, you know, like if you were a mechanic or you're an owner and you're hiring a mechanic and they can't speak to you, but they're amazing. And if you just dismiss them because they can't do one thing that's not required, all of a sudden you've lost out as an owner and they've lost out in the position.
Yes.
And so being open to that surprise and not being controlling, not hammering things into your own understanding, but allowing the world to inform you, it'll make your life so much more full. Yeah. You'll be more adaptive, but you have to be flexible.
Yeah, that's right. You can't even make up your mind about people you know very well, even after you've heard them speak.
Right.
If you've heard very specific things, you can trust the more you have a relationship with somebody, the longer you have a relationship, you have a knowing about which way they're going to lean or bend, and you maybe even find out that they are trustworthy. This is a consistent thing with them. I'm finding this is how they show up as reliable or whatever it is that they're showing in their speech or personality. The longer you get to know them, the more you can rely on that. But then making up your mind about something, sometimes it's shifting. There's a lot of shifting going on.
Right.
And again, behind the scenes, there's things that we don't see. And so we don't really know what a person could be experiencing. And there's just got to be grace for that.
Right.
This great unknown.
Right, right.
Well,
right.
Wonders never cease.
Right.
This is just the feeling of it's never ceasing, that this could turn and I need to be okay to let my wonder be open.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then life is so much more full. So, I mean, sometimes people kind of come to life with a natural closedness in their life. It's one of the core personality traits. So if you're listening to this, it's a case for being open. And that can go along with a few other characteristics. People who are more closed can maybe be a bit more critical, be a bit more no in their first statement. Sometimes the more positive frame around that would be realists. And so there's a case for that too. There's a case for being real. And oftentimes those are the individuals who will see the surprises and take that information and help adapt the world to it. But I think that there's a cost with that as well. When you're feeling more real, when you have a no in your spirit, when you have a criticalness that's present initially, it colors everything that you see. And I think there's a feeling of seeing the world more positively and having more flexible mental health around that feeling of openness. So if I was going to choose, even though there's value to both, that shift towards being open, I think can be very good for people.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I do have a lot of respect for people who are dogmatic about things that are mm-hmm. strong in the way of being respectful and just their purpose and their mission and they're goal-oriented, but they also come from a place of strong conviction. Maybe it doesn't mix much with compassion when they're so dogmatic. And so that openness can help open to compassion.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I think that being open can lead to greater compassion. I know even in my own business, you know, I was just thinking about examples recently of having to take things which we've always done in our business and be like, no, it doesn't have to be done that way. It can be done in a new way, and we can be more compassionate towards different things, different realities. And it's not easy. It's not easy to shift those things in ourselves. It's this weird stuck point. You know, I could have this explanation and it's like, okay, yes, this makes sense in every way, but it's still scary because there might be some unintended consequence. And we've never done it that way.
Yeah.
And there's a feeling of wanting to maintain the status quo.
Yeah. Also, giving yourself that grace to consider flexibility. That's great, but there are some times where it's not about needing to bend because what is there is firm. So, for example, obviously, moral values, things that just aren't meant to shake. And so if it's bounded in something like that, don't let it shake. And that's where I will respect the dogmatic approach to almost anything if it has a foundation like that. And it's hard sometimes then to, again, be compassionate. When it's like that, it's like, I'm standing here, get out of my way. But it's much more important that those values stand.
And I think there is a place for things to be true and to stand for things that are true. But I also think, like, if I was giving a speech, this might be an example. If I'm giving a speech about something, what I've found in giving speeches in front of audiences is that you can be much more dogmatic. You can be much more firm about what's true or not true in front of a crowd. But then when you talk to people individually about specific things in their lives, that kind of speech doesn't really work anymore. And you have to be much more open to nuances, allowing people to move towards things. And I think sometimes some confusion that can happen is people will see people in the front being more firm about the truth and then feel like the right thing to do is to apply that to their relationships, because that must be how that person has gotten to be so successful, by being so direct. And that's a miss. That's a real miss, because it's very different. The social nuances around being in front is very different.
Yeah. And what is it meant for? Take everything with a grain of salt. What are you hearing? How can you discern it for yourself? Does it mean that it is applicable to the exact area or the exact example, and then suddenly you're doomed? Because if I apply that, it's going to crush me. It's like, okay, well, probably not that literal on that spot.
Right.
Can you take it and weigh it?
Right.
Yes.
Yes. You have to figure this out. People have to apply it to themselves, right? And it's diffused over a crowd, and everybody has that ability to do that, and which is so important.
Yes.
And then, yeah, you can have that dynamic, right?
Yeah. Test things. You need to be able to do that for yourself and put it through your own filter of learning, and maybe it shifts something for you to say, wake up. That's an area for you, really. And yes, it is direct, and yes, please do apply it, because it's going to change your life for the better. And then you'll be able to discern that if you especially take notes, I think it's really good. I have the privilege of being able to do these edits, and so I get to re-listen. But if I didn't, I would have to take notes. I would need to be able to write down and pull it apart for myself and see. Because it matters what I'm hearing from you. It really matters. Like, there's truth coming at me. This show, there's truth coming at people, and it matters. I hope that it's not just dismissed and it's just a fun thing, and, oh, now I know something, and hey, that's great.
Yes, I agree. And I think that when we're taking in information, we miss most of it, you know, when we're hearing people talking about things. And I think that's also one of the ways that we can defend ourselves against surprises and against the new, is by just not really taking it in. We can just kind of be like, oh, I don't like where this is going. This is maybe producing a feeling that's very subtle that I'm just not comfortable with. And we just allow the information to pass us by rather than actually processing. We always have to make decisions about what we're going to process, but it's so common for us to just only process information that's familiar to us and that we actually already know. I remember when I was studying in university and I was struggling in my first year to get the grades that I needed to get in order to be a clinical psychologist. And I realized that I was spending time reviewing, but in my review, I was not seeing things that I didn't know. I would only see the things, or I would bias the things that I already knew. So I was kind of just reviewing things I didn't need to review. And so I took a method, and it forced me to actually focus on all the things I didn't know in my studying technique. And then I could study way less time and get much better grades. So finding ways to push yourself to encounter the new, to encounter the wonder of the things you don't know, might actually take some effort.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to be open about relationships too, because if you make up your mind and you say you know something about perhaps even a couple, because the spouse has come to you and they've confided all kinds of specific things, it's still not what they are behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a way to be able to have grace and allow for things, because I know that there are broken relationships.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Based on making up your mind.
Right.
And not allowing those wonders to cease you.
Right. Yes. Yes. People, when they know each other for a certain amount of time, will just see the things that are familiar to them that they've learned about the person before. But people are more like streams than they are like rocks. They are always changing. And even when you thought you knew them, you probably didn't know them as well as you thought. And people are always surprising us. And so to kind of take that and actually be like, maybe I don't know my partner as well as I think I do, can be so valuable.
Yes. So we could have done this show backwards and forwards. I think we did. Wonders never cease. And sometimes you need to cease. You're wondering.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you, Cyrus.
Thank you, Marianne.
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose. Thank you. That was Manitoba artist Danny Carroll with his song Going Forth.